The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. And I'll stop right there. Typically, I give Andy Hamilton a nickname, but it sounds like the owl has been so popular. I need to make a decision whether I just want to continue that name in perpetuity or if I need to, continue to come up with ones, or is the owl now your permanent nickname?
I don't know. I think you need to keep going on the nicknames.
Okay.
You need to keep mixing it up. Okay. The owl, nothing has made me laugh like the owl did. I don't know why that one made me laugh so hard, but that one was, it has stuck a little bit.
It has. Other people have mentioned it.
You got Shane Sparks calling me the owl.
Yeah.
My girlfriend referred to me as the owl.
I did. So maybe we'll pull that out later, but I'll come up with a nickname next time. So we just had to stop there and see where we're going to go.
Did you say I'll come up with a nickname or I'll come up with a nickname?
Both. You decide what you want that to sound like. But hey, we have another Casper's Corner coming up. We have Kerry Collott on the end of the program. So we have some fun stuff coming up. But we also have the mailbag. Our mailbag is filled with Aaron Swayze. I don't know if you had a chance to read those emails I forwarded to you, but he is on a mission to find the elusive 27-6 meet where one pin wins the dual meet. But he has some interesting dual meets he's brought up. There was a dual meet recently where, let's see, there was a 0-3 prior to the finish of the first match to control of the mat conducts and unsportsmanlike. He said it was nuts. So thanks to Aaron for bringing up that scenario. It's been fun to look at some of his scores, especially going back to some of the era. And this goes back to what Andy has talked about. You've talked about the era where there was a time where the rules weren't good in college wrestling for scoring. And there was a Northern Illinois dual meet that Aaron found that I think was 24-6. And all of the matches were close. And he went through a scenario of saying, hey, if this happened, this might be the one where Northern Illinois gets the win. But I appreciated that because it allowed us to look through the sport in a historical lens about what's happened from now until then and just seeing some scores and how close some of those matches were during that era when there wasn't a lot of action. And we're seeing that show up in some of the scores that he brought up.
Got to give credit to my man Leighton Gall as well. He's helped us out with some stuff on track wrestling. He brought one to my attention. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Bedlam duel in 2009. February 22nd, 2009. Final score 27-6. Oklahoma State. It doesn't come out the way that we're looking for, but listen to these. Obie Blanc won by forfeit. There's six for the Cowboys. Or 22 if you want to look at our format.
Sure.
So that aside, listen to these scores. Chris Noddy, Oklahoma State, decision over Brian Shelton, 3-2. Jamal Parks of Oklahoma State, winner in a tiebreaker over Seth Vernon, 2-1. Kyle Terry of OU beat Luke Silver, 9-2. That's the most lopsided match of the duel. Neil Arisman, now the Little Rock head coach, for Oklahoma State, won by decision over Chad Terry, 2-1. Brandon Mason of Oklahoma State, winner in sudden victory over Ryan Smith, 3-1. Newley McSpadden of Oklahoma State, one of the all-time classic names of college wrestling, winner in a tiebreaker over Jeff James, 2-1. Pat Flynn of Oklahoma, winner over Cody Hill, 5-3. Clayton Foster of Oklahoma State, winner 7-5 over Eric Lipotsky, and then Jared Rosholt of Oklahoma State, 10-4 winner over Nathan Fernandez. So 27-6, not what we're looking for. Close, though. And that's one match where if OU had had a fall in there, you look at all those tight Oklahoma State wins, 3-2, 2-1, 2-1, 3-1 in overtime, 2-1 in a tiebreaker, 7-5. That's one that potentially could have gone the other way
sure.
Cumulative scoring if somebody had posted up a big number for Oklahoma.
Yeah. And even with Aaron Swayze's dual meet that he brought up with first round Iowa versus Northern Illinois, this was at the 2006 National Duels. I was really surprised because you hear 24-6, you think, oh, they blew them out, but every single match was close. It was 5-2, 4-3, 6-4, 9-3, 3-2, 3-1, 5-2, 7-3, 6-4, sudden victory, and 6-3. Again, that's the era where there wasn't a lot of action, and you would think, man, Iowa's just going to steamroll Northern Illinois, but they're competitive in every single match except for 149. You turn some of those around and you have exactly what could happen in that situation. And people keep talking about the one match could win it. I'd be more worried or making the case more about 2-3 could win it for your team. That's where we sure need to start looking and seeing where that shakes out.
A lot more common.
Yeah.
A lot more common.
And I think we could find a few of those. And we found one with Ohio State winning 4 and over Michigan, and they, PDI score blew them out. And so the more we can find those types of scores, the better. But it all goes back to even what we were talking about before this show started. Hey, baseball's making some changes. We've used this PDI based on baseball. This came out of our conversation about statistics in baseball. They're looking at making changes on designated hitter, universal designated hitter, 3 hitter minimum for a relief pitcher, and kind of a shot clock, 20-second clock for pitchers to make their next pitch. So they're on the trend up and making things more user-friendly. This is America's pastime, and you really don't mess with the rules too much there, but they're looking at the same things we are, Andy.
Some of these things are pretty interesting. The stuff that has been proposed. Universal DH, I'm all for that, Kyle.
I know you would.
All for that. I don't need to see pitchers hit. I want to see the best hitters in the world hit. I think they've been kind of trending towards things to shorten games a little bit. And some of the stuff, I mean, you're talking about shortening an average game like 1 minute or so. If we're going to shorten games, let's look at things that could shorten it on average 10, 15, 20 minutes, make it significant difference. Some of this stuff is just like silly to me that going to make substantial changes to the game only to cut a minute or two off the average game time.
So as we relate this to baseball, we were talking about what's happened in point deductions. Isn't it interesting that wrestling is a sport that will give you points or subtract points without earning it? If you score a touchdown in football, that's the only way you can score points is actually doing it. Same with baseball. You have to touch home plate, or I guess there's an interference call, possibly, right, in baseball. But for the most part, there has to be some semblance of touching home plate, crossing the threshold, making a field goal. Wrestling, it's interesting because you subtract points, you can add points based on penalties. I don't know if that's a bad or good thing in the sport, but it is something that separates wrestling a little bit because we've seen that quite a bit, that a lot of times with team scores, they're taking away points. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. And if it isn't a good thing, what's the solution? I just don't like the idea that you take away points. If you earn a run in baseball, you get to keep that run. You score a basket in NBA basketball, they're not saying, misconduct, we're going to take away 2 points. That basket gets taken off. What's the solution to that? Because we are unique in that way that we actually subtract points from the cumulative score of a wrestling duel.
Well, I was talking to Jessman Smith about this just recently. Southeast Polk assistant coach, Big Ten champion, 2-time All-American for the Hawkeyes. And we were talking about this. He's to the points you just made. It's you can't take points off the board in other sports. And he felt like a warning card system, like soccer, you get a couple yellow cards or 3 or 4 yellow cards, whatever it may be, would be the possible solution. You get a couple yellow cards and you get set down.
It's interesting.
Or three or four, or whatever the number is that, you're actually facing a suspension rather than you get docked a team point in a dual meet where the dual score is out of hand. What does that really accomplish?
Nothing. That's why I don't think they care a lot of times when it is out of control. Now, hey, I'll tell you what, there was a control of the mat penalty in 2001 when Minnesota was trying to beat Iowa. I can guarantee you Mark Schwab and Joe Russell, who are the assistant coaches that got penalized for that, did not sleep the night before because it was that close. They said they didn't sleep a wink because imagine how they would have felt if they had a team point taken off and they would have lost to Iowa by one that year where they had the 10 All-Americans and it was a tight team race. That could potentially play a part. And so, yeah, you would, even to this day, you'd feel guilty if that happened. So I don't necessarily know that I like taking away points, and in no other sport does that happen. But again, what is the solution? We kind of get in this bubble though with wrestling because we just take everything for granted. We just don't ask questions. We don't probe onto why things are what they are. We just assume, hey, they're going to take a point away. That's just the way things are, instead of really analyzing it and trying to figure out a better solution. And I think that's our goal with PDI, is just coming up with better ways to really market and brand our sport that is a little bit more traditional than what we've had.
Well, I think we're in a period now where people are more open to change than ever before with wrestling. You look at some of the things that have transpired. We talked about this on a recent show. 3-point near fall no longer exists in college wrestling. How long was that part of college wrestling?
Forever.
Yeah. So now we got a 4-point near fall. We got talk of a push out point, the neutral danger rule, where you used to be able to basically lay on your back for as long as you wanted. As long as there's no control, you weren't getting docked points. It's no longer the case.
Yeah.
I think there's just a lot of things that I think people in the sport are more willing to dive into, look at, be receptive to change, examine, like, why are we doing this? Why has it been done this way? Well, just because we've done something for 50 some years doesn't mean that that's the reason to continue it. And I think that that's really cool. People are looking at ways to improve the sport. And sometimes you look for ways to improve the sport and you might wind up going backward for a little bit in some ways. Like, I'm not sure the edge of the mat rule. Not a big fan of the edge of the mat rule right now as far as the action calls. Just been a lot of inconsistency, and we've heard coaches talk about it. There's just, you're putting so many things in the minds of officials now. So let's simplify. And not just the officials, you're putting them in the minds of casual fans that we're making it harder and harder to understand when wrestling people struggle with some things. Sometimes you can imagine how hard it is for casual sports fans flipping through the stations to understand what's going on. So I said, sometimes you wind up taking a step back to take two steps forward. And hopefully we wind up doing that maybe with a step out point. Maybe we get there where it's a little more simplified and cut and dried.
To the point that we've tried to make, we like dual meets. We think that's the product or the future of the sport. And we kind of are repetitive on this, but we need to keep driving this home that we do have a dual meet season, and then we determine the national champion in a different way. One point that Cale Sanderson made a couple years ago when there was this debate about what they should do with dual meet championships, and they had that big summit where all the coaches came, he said, it's more fair at the national championship. It's a better determination of what the team is because you get to see the pecking order of where guys go. And it's not the feast or famine that you see now. If you win a decision, you get all the points, the other team doesn't. Whereas at a NCAA championships, if you're eighth place, you may not get as many as first place, but you at least scored points for your team. He has a point there. The only thing I don't like that it's still maybe 10-on-5 or 10-on-7. And that's where the inequity comes into play, is that you don't have a full team at the NCAA championships. You have spotty situations. And that's why only 4 or 5 teams legitimately can win in any given year. And that doesn't lead to the drama or uncertainty that other sports have, that someone could pull out an upset. And you can see that individually at the national championship. But I know for sure which teams are going to win the NCAA tournament this year. I can tell you that there's 4 teams that are competitive, probably going to be Penn State. But that doesn't lead to a lot of drama in how we market and brand the sport.
People follow the laundry, as David Mercatani likes to say. He said that a lot on our Weighing In podcast. They root for the laundry, and there's such a strong team allegiance. You know, it's why professional sports are so popular. It's why the NCAA basketball tournament is so popular. It's why college football is so popular. You start looking at individual sports, and I don't know that there's that same kind of connection where people root for, obviously you root for your friends and family and people, you know, the young athletes that you know that you followed for a while, but I don't know that there's that same type of tie that there is to team sports. And we see it in the state. You know, there are a lot of Iowa Hawkeye fans in this state and some diehard wrestling fans that are going to follow each of the Hawkeye individuals from start to finish throughout the season. Then there's going to be some people that show up in Carver Hawkeye Arena for big dual meets because they want to watch the Hawkeyes, not because necessarily they just want to see Spencer Lee or Michael Kemmerer. And I think that the only thing I can figure out why international wrestling in the United States is not as popular as college wrestling from an attendance standpoint is because of that team element. But that's the biggest thing that holds us back from drawing huge crowds. So we don't have that team element that we have in college wrestling.
Not at all. There's nothing there at all. You could say Team
Clubs
USA.
And stuff like that, but there's just not that same kind of affection towards the RTCs as there is towards those college programs.
Yeah, it just doesn't stick at all. You follow some individuals, but yeah, there's no, you're not seeing Ohio RTC shirts out there, but you're seeing a lot of Ohio State wrestling shirts. It just, you might see a little bit of crossover, but it just doesn't have that buzz in any way.
Be interesting to see what our international style stuff would look like if we ever had a professional league that got off the ground and kept going and going and going. And we had like what they're talking about with AWL, what their vision is with AWL to have teams in certain cities, 4, 8, 10 cities across America, where you get behind those.
Like the German league. Did you see some of the highlights from that recently? There was some.
Yeah. The Indian Pro League too. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know if it could take here. I think there's been good tries at it, and I think we want to continue to see that that route happen, but we'll definitely follow that. Andrew, we have another edition of Casper's Corner with Jacob Casper. He's a two-time All-American for the Duke Blue Devils, and he is on the line with us. How are you, Jacob?
I'm doing good. Welcome back to Casper's Corner.
We enjoyed it last time. That was a great question, and I think our hearts start beating fast because we have no idea what you're going to ask. So, Jacob Casper, the floor is yours.
That's right. Better be on the edge of the seat with your palms sweaty. This question was actually inspired by something that Georgie DiCamillo had tweeted out at one point, and something that going into my senior year, I put a lot of thought into. And it is, would you rather reach your absolute full potential? You put everything into it, 100%. You're the absolute best wrestler you can be, but end up second? Or would you rather not ever reach your full potential, but win the titles that you want?
Man, that's a...
Wow.
That's... Boy, what a great question. I'm going to say win the title. That's my gut feeling, because if you get the title, you won't know psychologically if you reached your full potential. You've got to think that you got there, because this has happened before. This is such a good question, because we've seen seasons where the NCAA champion didn't have the best season throughout the year. They may have had another better season, or their only loss was at the NCAA tournament, and they may have 10 losses and they won it, or they had one loss and got third. But I think when wrestling, we are judged by NCAA championships. So if you can get one of those, you got that title, you're going to be able to do so much more with that if you're able to get it. So I'm going with get the NCAA championship. What are your thoughts, Jacob?
It's a question that I've gone back and forth with. You know, I think I still go back and forth with it to some degree. Part of me, you know, wants the materialistic accolades. But then part of me just wants to find out how good I can be. And if at the end of the day, I think I put absolutely everything into it and I'm the very best version of myself and it's still not good enough on a given day, I think I could live with that. Whereas even with a title, I think it would mean a little bit less. And I just wouldn't care about it as much if I really didn't have to be the best version of myself to earn it. So I think I would want to be the very best version of myself, even if that means coming up a little bit short.
Andrew, any thoughts?
I think 20 years ago, I would have said, give me the titles. I think now I'd probably lean a little bit more in the other direction for the reason that Jacob just laid out.
But doesn't it maybe go back to what Jay Robinson has always said, that sometimes your best isn't good enough, sometimes you have to do what's required? So what if you just pulled it out and you did what's required to win the NCAA championship and you have that hanging on the mantle and you're able to use that and leverage it? I just think that there's just something to be said about getting it done and how you quantify that. I would think that winning a championship in some level means you did reach some level of potential that you had. So fascinating question. What do other people say to this? What's their response?
This is probably the most divided question I've ever asked. You know, I get about 50-50. Half the people were saying, give me the title. It doesn't matter because I still reached, you know, a level high enough to beat everybody else. And that's all that's required in the sport. It doesn't give an award that says reach your maximum potential. It just says you were better than everybody else. And then I have half the people that, you know, say the other way, like, you know, I just want to be the very best I can be. If I do that every single day and I can't get the title, it is what it is, but I want to be the best version of myself. And it's an interesting question. That's why I wanted to ask it.
Well, it is. And I think
it's an awesome question.
Yeah, it's great because when you think about it in terms of other people, would a guy like Dan Marino, what would his answer be? Would he say, I want that Super Bowl ring? He may have been the best quarterback of his era, but he doesn't have that ring. And, you know, Barry Sanders, maybe the best running back during his era, but Emmitt Smith has three rings. What would they say? And I think a lot of it just is contingent upon what you have or don't have. Turning this around on you, what do you think your full potential was? Do you think you had the potential to win an NCAA title?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have, you know, said what I did and trained the way that I did if I didn't think I could absolutely win it.
As far as reaching the potential, you've been there and been on the podium. What's the deciding factor between being in the semifinals or quarterfinals and coming back and getting fourth or sixth versus winning it? What, now that you have a year away to look at it, what's the difference?
It's interesting. You know, I think those guys that are in the top tier all share some common characteristics. They all work hard and they all can keep pushing when they get fatigued. You know, there comes that point where you take the average guy into deep water and he's going to roll over. He's going to give the takedown up for you, whatever it is. But it's the guys that are able to execute technique, perfectly when they're at that fatigued state. It's the guy that's able to stay disciplined for 7 minutes, is able to have flawless technique once they reach that deep water point that everybody talks about. Oh, you know, I took him into deep water. I drowned him. I broke him. And against a good guy, you know, I wrestled Tony Nelson out at the Olympic Training Center. I wrestle with Nick all the time. And what I've realized is those guys get to that point, you get yourself to that point, but nobody's ever going to fold. Nobody's head's ever going to go underwater. It's who can tread with the most perfect form. It's who can still execute high crotches, who can still hit baseline defense and do all the hard things when they're at that fatigued and really tired state. Those are the guys that are most successful. And then, you know, part of it is just timing and luck and the way you fall on things, you know, the way that training maybe went and how it was focused, but I think that the real deciding factor is discipline and ability to execute, you know, perfect or less flawed technique when you're tired and at that state.
What's that like to be in the third period of a tough match? Not many people know what that's like, but you've been in those situations. What do you think about during those moments?
I mean, it's different, you know, it's different every time. When you're performing poorly, you're thinking like, oh man, you know, don't let this be the reason I lose. Don't let this happen. Don't let that happen. And that was definitely something I fell victim to early in my career. But as you mature and as you grow and, you know, you learn a little bit more about sports psychology and you actually start coaching yourself, it's a lot of positive self-talk. You're telling yourself, hey, it's going to happen. stay to the solid things, you know, keep working. You're willing to do whatever it takes, heavy your hands up, make sure your feet are light, and you're just trying to self-talk your way through it and trying to push. When you feel that guy's starting to get tired, you try to siphon his gas tank and suck whatever he has left out of him, and really just execute and find a way to win. But, you know, it does depend on how you're competing. How you're competing determines what you're thinking.
How much do you pick up on body language of an opponent?
Yeah, I saw that tweet circulate. I'm not going to lie. I never really looked at my opponent too much. I never, you know, really, really focused on my body language as much either. I think that I was just focused on the task at hand, getting back to the center and controlling what I can control. The way that he's walking back to the center, the face that he's making, any of that, you know, that isn't influenced by me. That's not something I can control. I don't really care about that. Instead, I'm worried about getting back on the line, thinking what I have to do, and putting my full effort and focus onto that, and, you know, being able to execute that technique flawlessly.
Are you going Greco or freestyle?
I'm not sure yet.
You haven't decided?
We'll see.
Okay. We appreciate this. This is a great segment. We're going to keep doing this periodically. Every 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have our Casper's Corner. That was a great question. Keep them coming. We're going to have you back on in 2 or 3 weeks here. This is your segment, so you can take it any direction you want. Thanks for joining us for another Casper's Corner. Andy, that question, first of all, was outstanding, but it reminds me of a quote that Kurt Angle said. He said, "I'd rather have Dave Schultz be proud of me and place second than I would to win an Olympic gold medal and have him not be proud of me." And so as he was asking that question and we were formulating what our thoughts were on that, it reminded me of that thought on what's more valuable in your personal narrative. So I wasn't expecting that question, but I like the thought-provoking nature of what Jacob's able to do. I'm enjoying this segment. I think it's a lot of fun.
I love Casper's Corner.
Yeah, this is great. And
it's a great idea, Kyle.
Well, and now we get to get excited about what's going to come in the next couple weeks here. So I don't know what's going to transpire with this next question, but we don't want to know. I think that's going to be the fun part of all this.
Like he says, sit on the edge of your seat. Your palms are going to sweat, right?
They are. And this all came about by being in Budapest, and he just started cranking out questions, and we were interviewing him on a Facebook Live, and then he said, "Hey, I got a question for you." And then it just spawned into this conversation with Obi Blanc, Mike Machiavello, and Jacob Casper, you and me, at the hotel in Budapest. So I'm glad we have this opportunity,
yeah.
Jake.
He's
a high-level thinker. As we get ready for our Kerry Colite interview, there's been a lot of talk in the wrestling community about just antics and things that have gone on, but there's just a lot of positives. We really even haven't talked about Iowa State wrestling. Here's a program that really has had a complete turnaround in one season. Yeah, they haven't wrestled all of the programs, but they're in a pretty tough schedule with the Big 12. They took Iowa to a 1-point match, handled by Oklahoma State, but you have to give Kevin Dresser and his program credit for what they've been able to do in 1 year, especially with the mass exodus of what's gone on with just a lot of the guys transferring out of the program or in different programs right now. Kudos to Iowa State right now. They're doing a solid job.
Yeah, I mean, they go from 1-12 in 2016, 2017 to 8-10 last year. They're 9-2. Coming off a weekend in which they went 20-0 in matches, outscored a couple opponents by a combined 100-0 score, South Dakota State, Utah Valley. They've turned things around pretty well. I think, if you remember towards the end of the Kevin Jackson era, they had that summer in Fargo where they have like 5 champs maybe. And so there were some pieces in place that Kevin Dresser and his staff came into. I mean, you look up and down that lineup, Austin Gomez, they were able to retain him. He kind of wavered there for a little bit after the coaching change. They were able to keep him on board. That was big. Ian Parker, Fargo champ. Sammy Colbrey was a Fargo champ. Gannon Gremmel was a Fargo champ. They're starting to get some momentum going a little bit, and I think you look at the lineup, what they can add to it next year. They'll add David Carr to the lineup a couple of years, Aiden Reeves, maybe even as soon as next year. So they've recruited, they've added to what they inherited, and they've done a good job getting some of these guys on track. And then certainly the addition of Willie Mikles, I think, was probably pretty big for him too. I mean, you're adding a three-time All-American, really high character guy that is a good leader type of guy for a young up and coming team.
And what's compelling about this is that although we're seeing some dual meet results and we're seeing progress, you still are scratching your head on what they're going to look like at the NCAA championships. You just don't know.
Sure.
It might just be Mikles might get on the stand. You had said that a couple editions ago that he would be obviously the guy that has the best opportunity to be an All-American. But up and down the lineup, you have some solid guys, but none of them stand out, especially with maybe your best guy, Austin Gomez. He's in the toughest weight class. You just don't know what's going to happen there. So I think just a storyline, where does Iowa State finish at the NCAA championships? I think that's going to be really fun to see where they play out.
There's a wide variance there. If they get four or five All-Americans, which, I mean, it's possible. You look up and down the lineup, Gomez, Parker, Deegan, Mikles, maybe another guy in there, Cole Bray, somebody like that. Sneaks onto the stand, you get five All-Americans. It's a pretty high ceiling there for them. Conversely, if they only end up with one, then you start falling back maybe into the 25 range, 30 range. And so really intriguing team to see what happens for Iowa State over the course of the next 5-6 weeks.
And Penn State, Nick Corey did a nice article on Track Wrestling about Penn State's jaw-dropping success. I love that headline because it really is. We haven't talked as much about them just because they're just playing the line and they're dominating as usual. It really is jaw-dropping what they have, especially when you just go up and down the individual rankings and what they have in their arsenal. It really is Penn State and everyone else. I think it's just more of a matter of which team is going to get second place at this point. Even if bad things have happened, and we saw that last year with Jason Nolf looking like he might be suspect, he still comes out and wins the NCAA championships. This team really does have something special going on, and I think it's an era we're going to be talking about for a long time.
Yeah, 10 duels this year, they've outscored opponents 297-63. Their starters in matches this year are 72-10 in dual matches. So those are pretty impressive statistics. I think Michigan put up a pretty good fight, though, last week. There were some matches in there. I thought I was really impressed with Nolf widening the gap on Pantaleo. That was a really tight match last year before Nolf got hurt. And I think Jason had to ride him out in the third period to win that match in Ann Arbor. Massa and Vincenzo Joseph. It was down to the final second of overtime, and Joseph finishes the takedown. Mark Hall had to get a takedown late to beat Amin. 84 was competitive. So, you know, we used in the headline, it's been jaw-dropping what they've done. But that being said, I think I was really impressed with Michigan in the fight that Michigan put up in that dual meet. It was a really entertaining duel, and what they've done over the course of, you know, since year two of the Cale Sanderson era, it's been staggering. I think maybe the most mind blowing statistic to me that I've come across in 20 years of college wrestling is the fact that Penn State has won 16 consecutive NCAA semifinal matches. Think about how hard it is to win an NCAA semifinal match, let alone 16 straight. That's incredible.
That's a great statistic. And as we're talking about competitiveness in dual meets, I just go back to the 05 season where Oklahoma State won it. They had five champions. They dominated that season over Michigan. I think there were some tight dual meets throughout the season. So I think there's kind of this narrative that people might be closer than you think. But I'll tell you what, once Penn State gets there, I just don't see anyone, especially in that tournament environment, touching them at the NCAA championships. Is it 171 points good, which is the records at 170, the 97 Iowa team? I don't know yet, but I think they have the personnel this season, next season, to possibly push the the envelope on getting that record. And I think those are the kind of records that that Penn State is certainly capable of, especially with having four returning national champions.
Yeah, and then you start looking at guys that they've added to the mix here, that Anthony Kassar, Shakur Rashid, these guys have ascended into the conversation about potential champions. And boy, you look at that lineup and 57 on up, they're in the mix to make the finals, if not win titles at all of them. And we're talking, of course, about four champs in there, but man, they could put on a pretty incredible display out in Pittsburgh. You know, they're going to have a tidal wave of momentum with that crowd behind them too out there.
What do you say we get to someone who started his career at Penn State, ended at Lock Haven? What do you say we get to Kerry Collott?
Sounds good.
Our guest today is a four-time NCAA Division I All-American. He won two NCAA championships for Lock Haven, two world medals, an Olympian in 2000. Now he's the head wrestling coach at Campbell University. Kerry Collott, how are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I think with you being with the Campbell Camels, and we're recording this on Wednesday, the natural question is, do you celebrate Hump Day in any way at Campbell?
Every day, orange. Wednesday is always orange.
Really? So there's a tradition? You got to wear orange on Wednesday?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the tradition they push. I got a gray shirt on today with orange lettering. But yeah, that's Wednesday here is wear your orange day, show your Campbell pride at Hump Day.
So you got to like that Geico commercial, I imagine.
Yeah, very similar.
Does John Smith like that you wear orange?
I don't know. I don't think we're bothering John Smith just yet. So, yeah,
so
I think he's okay with it.
When John Smith was the head coach in 2000, what was it like when you guys went live in the practice room? Did he still have it?
We wrestled, John and I, you know, I think John, you know, he was still, I mean, John's a highly competitive guy, right? You wouldn't have, you know, six titles if you weren't like that. But I made my first world team in 97. You know, John was kind of my weight class coach. And then, you know, one day we wrestled and I think he wanted to see if he still had it. And I always tell people this story that the worst part about wrestling John Smith back then is when I got on top of him in the power chair position, in the offensive position, I'd get my hands under lock for a gut wrench, and then I'd spend about 10 seconds trying to get my hands unlocked because he would grind my fingers up so much with his body weight. But he was good. He was good. He whooped me pretty good that day. And then, you know, we wrestled again later, you know. But yeah, John Smith had it for a long time, that's for sure.
You've always said that your favorite style is freestyle and that you couldn't wait after college got over that you could get into your favorite style. Now you're a college coach. How do you compare and contrast that? How do you like the college style now that you're coaching it?
Well, you know, it's goal orientation, right? You know, so I'm not afraid to tell people that my favorite style was freestyle. I mean, I always wanted to be the best in the world. I was really goal oriented. That's why I did the things that I did. But now as a coach, you know, I'm goal-oriented into perfecting all the different levels of folk style wrestling from the top, bottom, neutral position. You know, as a coach, I think I spend most of my time, you know, trying to get guys to believe in themselves. I mean, you know, conquering the sport, you know, in terms of winning national titles is really not that difficult when it comes to the technique side. It's the mental side and getting guys to believe in themselves. And so, you know, as a coach, you're playing psychologist as much as the practice side of it's pretty easy in terms of planning.
I think you said when you were in high school, I think you only knew one name, and that was Dan Gable. Now it's virtually impossible with all of the social media we have not to know who is out there. Is that the biggest change, just access?
The access now is crazy. And I, like I said, I think we have all these guys, another 77 Division I programs. You know, it's a very tough sport to become a head coach in. And you know, so now you have access to all these guys, NCAA champs running wrestling clubs, All-Americans running wrestling clubs, the videos everywhere. I mean, you have such an opportunity to excel now and study the sport. It's just crazy. It's mind-boggling.
Do you think that would have helped or hurt you when you were in your high school career?
I think it would help. I learned a lot from video. I really did. Like, I had... I had people who had the VHS tapes. I'd watched Sergei Belaglazov. I lost this tape. I'm so mad to this day. But I had, you know, every one of his matches from like the 70s through the 90s. I used to just watch him. I used to watch the Japanese from my coach at Penn State, Oishi. He had tapes of the Japanese, Tadaki and those guys. And then when I was at Foxcatcher, they had, we had created like the first, video library where you could go in and type in arm throw. DuPont had spent some money and this, you know, it's like an old jukebox. You'd see this crane go and grab a disc and drop it down into this thing. And then, you know, there'd be six or seven arm drags or arm throws show up depending on what you type. So I did a lot of studying on my own, you know, to add stuff to my arsenal and freestyle. And so, yeah, it would have definitely helped me. I feel like the way my brain works.
You might be the greatest high school wrestler ever. There was so much buzz when you were in high school. What was it like knowing that you were a focal point and just really someone that really gave meaning to your community during that era?
You know, I didn't think too much of it back then. You know, I really didn't. People ask me that question a lot. I really wasn't focused on that stuff. I think, you know, subconsciously, you know, I always tell people if you open the newspaper and you saw your name in the headlines, I didn't read the article. You know, in my mind, it was reassurance that I'm doing things right. You know, that's what I think it was. It was continually doing things right. And then when I went away, I think I really knew what it meant to the community when I was making the Olympic team, when I saw them support it, when I saw them rally behind it, and I saw them show up and truly excited about it. I realized what, you know, it gave some of these guys, they were just appreciative of the time when I was there and supporting it. It gave everybody something to rally behind. Then I really knew the impact of what I had done to my community.
What do you think it would have been like for you to have grown up in this era with all the social media spotlight, given what you accomplished at that age?
Well, you know, I always ask myself that too. And I don't really, you know, you like to say you were a certain way. Look, I was always taught to be humble. You know, my father and parents and mother were always, you know, be humble, you know, don't be cocky, don't be arrogant. You know, now we're moving into like this, we're seeing this MMA crossover, right? We're seeing these guys go at each other on social media and things of that nature. So I tend to say that I wouldn't have done that because I'm the type of person now, I don't want a guy knowing what I'm thinking. Competing, I didn't want them to know what I was thinking. If I was cutting weight hard going to the scale, I would, you know, I'd show up to the scale looking like I wasn't cutting weight. You know, I wanted my emotions in check. If I beat you, I wanted it to seem easy. I wasn't going to celebrate it, just to keep everything in check. So I like to think I would have been like that. But, man, I don't know. You know, you can say a certain thing. But, you know, if I'd have grown up with social media, the way it kind of affects some of these kids, I mean, you know, I think I would have had some humility still. But, you know, I don't know. I really don't know.
Given what's going on in sport right now, a lot of attention on celebrations and post-match taunting and things of that nature. What's your stance on that as a coach? Where do you guys draw the line? What do you think's acceptable and good for the sport, and what maybe crosses that line?
Man, that's a good question. Look, I tell my guys what I just told you, how I would have done it. Let's not celebrate. If we beat them, let's make it look easy. We were expected to win. You know, that's how I guess that's our psychological warfare. But at the same time, you know, if somebody says something online as a coach, I'm going to use it to fire up my guys. So I'm taking a little different stance on it. You know, that's how we use, you know, that stuff, the celebrating and the action. If it's genuine celebrating. But I see a guy who's excited that he pulled off a big match, you know, I can relate to that, you know, and I'm excited for him. The taunting and things like that, I'm not really into it, guys. You know, that's not me. That's not my nature. But I do like genuine expression and genuine excitement.
Given what we've talked about earlier with folk style, freestyle, what are your proposed changes, or what direction would you like our collegiate style to lean toward if you had the magic wand?
The magic wand? I would probably be sitting here saying, you know, let's go to the international style, but I love folk style too. I mean, I do like it, you know. I would like to see some rule changes, right? I mean, I've voiced that, you know, I've voiced the red shirt system, you know, should be changed. We got, you know, I think guys being actively part of the team competing and not burning a year, eliminating forfeit. I mean, I wrestled Gardner Webb last night and they've run into a stomach flu and some injuries and they had three forfeits. And I sit there and feel for a guy when you got that situation, when you got guys in red shirts that it'll be nice to plug that hole for a duel. So I feel like that is something that needs to come really fast. I know we're doing it in football now and the NCAA says they're waiting to see how it goes. Well, we know how it's going to go. Let's just get it done and move it for all sports. I think the step out rule needs to be in place. I think for folks style, we tweak it a little bit where, you know, if a guy steps out, action continues, the ref holding one and the same rules apply on the edge. Let wrestling continue. And the guy gets the greater of the two. So if I'm in on a leg and you're standing and you stepped out, I've earned the one. But if I can finish the takedown, I only get the two. If I can't finish, I'm getting the one. I think that would be a valuable rule change for us. And referees have a lot to think about right now. And we're complicating it for them. I think the hands to the face should be a warning. And if it's intentional hit, give the intentional hit point. I think there's a lot of accidental hits like we saw in Seriano and Fix. I think that one needs to change. And I think I'd like to see the team scoring adjusted. You know, I'd like to see where, you know, in taking this from freestyle, where if a guy loses a bout, if he scored an offensive point, in the competition, you know, that his team earns a point, and not an escape point. It has to be an offensive turn or offensive takedown. So we don't have a guy out there just staying alive. He continues to wrestle. I like a 10-point tech too. I'd like to see a 10-point tech in freestyle. I mean, in folk style. So if I had to make, you know, wave the wand, that's what I'd be doing.
Do you like the current international freestyle rules as it stands right now?
Yeah, I don't mind them. I think they're okay. People ask me that one too. I liked my back in my day where it was, you know, 5 minutes, and if you hadn't scored three, you went to an automatic three-minute overtime. Maybe that's just because it was my air and what I was used to, but I don't mind the two periods, 3 minutes at all. The only thing I don't like, I'm not a fan of the last point scored. I don't like that. I still don't like that one. I mean, you're up by a takedown, you earned it, but you get the last one. I mean, we see guys sit back now and, you know, you gave up the first takedown and they're going to wait, you know, especially in the heavier weights, they're going to wait for the last, you know, 30 seconds and try to blast the guy off his feet.
But you gotta like that there's more equity and fairness. If we go back to your story and just all the times you got hosed on the backroom politics, I would think that if you were wrestling under those rules today, that would have been cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that absolutely. I would, you know, that stuff all went away and the reviews are there, Matt side, and I would have definitely been in favor of that. I will say there is one rule in folk style that I would like to see, and that is a 1-point swipe. You know, I would like to see quicker turns to get more creative on top. I think you take a guy down with a double and you can slide into a tight waist and you may not have cinched it tilt up all the way. I think every swipe should be a point up to four. You know, I think this, where people are complaining about multiple takedowns and then one guy gets a takedown and he's back in the match. I think we could see that really change our top wrestling where if I can sneak a cheap tilt in for one swipe, it's one point. I'm in favor of that one as well.
Would your life be better right now if you had a world, a championship, or an Olympic gold medal?
You guys are going deep on this one. If you're asking me if I want my a world gold medal or a Olympic, yeah, absolutely. I don't know if my life would be, but maybe, you know, in the end, maybe I'm meant to live with that pain and use it and make sure other people don't make the same mistakes. And, you know, I look back at my training at the time, I felt like I was doing everything possible to the best of my ability to be the best in the world and do it the right way. And I just needed to score more points, you know, and really not let them take it from me. So, but yeah, I definitely would like to have my medal. That's for sure.
Well, one of the matches that never happened in live competition was you against Tom Brands. If that happened, what would that match look like in a 3-match series?
You got to go peak for peak. So, in 96, I almost made it to the Olympic trial finals against Tom, but I wasn't mature enough or ready enough or focused enough to beat him during that time. And you're talking about Tom's peak years. And then you go to, you know, you start getting to 98, 99, 2000 where I'm doing my best wrestling. And those are my peak years. I mean, I think it would have been a match. I mean, you ask Tom, he's going to say he won. You ask me, I'm going to say I won. I mean, I wrestled guys that he wrestled and, you know, and beat guys that he beat and beat guys that he lost to. So, I definitely think it would have been a battle. We both would have been out there after it. So that's for sure. But I'm not going to throw Tom Brands on his bus and I'm not going to, you know, concede that he's going to win either.
John Smith, same question. I know you did it in practice, but if you had that opportunity to go live prime against prime.
Well, I mean, John was good. John would have been the guy that you'd really had to test yourself against. I think with John, when I look back, if I was going to beat John, probably the first time I wrestle him, he wins and I'd have to make adjustments. You know, I mean, you know, John Smith was just on a different level, you know, and I always tell people like having John Smith in my corner in matches was some of the best things I could have had to see. You know, the best wrestler in the world of his time sitting in your corner was a real confidence boost for me. And, but yeah, you know, John might have, if I were to beat John, it might have taken me three or four times to wrestle.
If Dave Schultz were alive today, would our sport look different than it does right now?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, you know, Dave's first love was always freestyle. You know, I don't think Dave, I mean, Dave won an NCAA title, but Dave, he really had no interest in folk style. He had an interest in human beings. He had an interest in wrestlers in the sport, and he would help anybody. His true love of wrestling was freestyle. You know, I think we'd have seen him, you know, had Foxcatcher falling apart without his death. We'd have seen him probably back at the U.S. Olympic Training Center. So, I think it's very possible. Yeah, he would have. He was definitely a guy that could have helped us at the international level if he was a national team coach.
As far as your collegiate schedule, you've went 5 dual meets. You're 5-0. You have 8 dual meets on the schedule. Not as many traditionally as other teams. Was that deliberate to only have 8 dual meets?
No, not deliberate at all. I had teams pull out on me. We had the schedule set, and then they pulled out. So then what I had to do was rush and get into more tournaments is what I had to do. You know, and so being undefeated at 5-0 is awesome. I wish we'd have had more teams on the schedule. But, yeah, we had some guys pull out last minute.
Who would you like to get on your schedule? Do you want to have a full schedule where you're getting the Oklahoma State, Iowa's, Iowa State's, Penn State's?
Yeah, I think so now with where we've taken the program, you know, we had to start somewhere and bring it up. And as we got more competitive, we had to reach out to more competitive teams. And now we're a competitive team and we need to have more of those guys on the schedule. I'd like to wrestle people, you know, on the East Coast. We had Maryland originally and then that got changed. We were supposed to compete with Brown and that got changed. But yeah, I would like to hit some of those teams next year. I think next year we're trying to do a sweep out to Michigan and hopefully get, you know, Michigan State and Central Michigan on the roster on the schedule or have them come here and then vice versa. And then we're trying to plan a trip out, you know, out west for next season.
Kerry, what made the Campbell job appealing to you?
Well, you know, I think I was ready for a change. I was at UNC. I really, the biggest thing that appealed to me was the athletic director at the time, which was Bob Roller. And sad to say, he left about a month ago. So the position is open. You know, so Bob, I really felt good about the guy I was going to be working for. You know, he was a genuine guy. I could tell he was going to give me everything within his means to help me build this program up. I felt like he believed in what I was going to do. With the program. And so that was the big thing. And then the facilities, a lot of people don't realize what we have down here. I mean, we just built a $2 million wrestling room. We got a $35 million arena. We're building a $57 million student center, excellent academics. And it's a smaller campus where, you know, you have less distraction. So I get a more serious kid in regard to in academics and wrestling.
As far as recruiting internationally, you have a heavyweight from Finland, Heino. Not sure even as recently as going to the World Championships, how to pronounce his first name, Jerry.
Well, we call him, nobody can pronounce his first name in the Finnish.
Okay.
So we just call him Jerry.
Okay. How do you pronounce it?
You're asking me to pronounce it, and I can't pronounce it. It's like Yurik or something. Or, yeah, so we just, you know, everybody on this team pretty much has a nickname. So, you know, so he just goes by Jerry. And we also have a guy, for a heavyweight from Mongolia, too, and I can't pronounce his name, so his nickname is Adi.
All right. Well, it makes me feel better that I can't pronounce it. But getting those guys in the fold, how much of a transition is it to get them acclimated to folk-style wrestling and knowing you can't lock hands and some of the rules that they have to adapt to?
Jerry wasn't bad because his brother was here as an 84-pounder. So when he would go home in the summer, he would work with him, you know, on it. And so Jerry's transition was pretty easy. Adi's had we got him from a JUCO. His transition, I think, is still in the process. He's still working on the mat wrestling. We have to get him, you know, with his turns. He's got to get better with his turns. He's got to get better with his escapes. The neutral position is not a problem for him. He's pretty slick on his feet, but he's got to transition. So I think it just kind of depends a little bit on the guy, obviously. We've seen it with Europeans. It's a tough transition. You spend your whole life, you know, fighting in a parterre stance, and you know, it's the conditioning level to work off the bottom. It's the conditioning level when you take a guy down and you know he's going to go flat. Now all of a sudden he's not going flat; he's continually building up. So that's been a transition for them.
Looking at your roster and following up on that recruiting question, I think there's like maybe 20 some odd states that are represented on your roster. You know, from Alaska, California, yeah. Texas, all along the East Coast. What's your approach to recruiting? How are you able to cast a net that wide?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is kids reaching out to us, and coaches have really liked what we've done. So we'll get calls from coaches all the time. So originally when I got here, I thought it would be that East Coast strong. That was the plan, but it just kind of organically just developed, man. And so we have them just from the connections. We've got a lot of guys from guys in an area who said, hey, this guy's on the team, and they've pulled kids. We've got coaches who have been connected with us, and that's pulled kids. And yeah, it is all over. So people ask me that, you know, where's your recruiting territory? I'm like, man, it's all over. You know, I mean, it's just kind of developed that way. So we've been able to look at everybody. We've been lucky to have a budget that allows us to look at everybody. And so that's where it's been.
You started your college career at Penn State, then went to Lock Haven, and you just talked about the atmosphere at Campbell being a little bit smaller campus. Do you think that fits your personality a little bit better than some of the bigger colleges?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a go, go, go guy. The best quality about me is I'll knock walls down to get something. It's also my worst quality, I always tell people, because if I'm going down the wrong path, it's too late. You can't stop me. I've already started moving, you know, and at a small school, you know, I always tell people, if it's a nice day, I can go right up the hallway and tell my operations guy, hey, I'm throwing the mat outside today and we're practicing outside just to make a change, you know, or, you know, we moved our dual meet last night from one gym to another just because we thought the atmosphere would be better and tighter, and boom, we did it, you know. And if you're at a big school, there's, you don't want to put the mat outside, you want to have a day, okay, go to facilities, fill out this form. You know, it's run like a corporation. You're talking about, you know, 20,000, 25,000 people on a campus. You just don't do things like that. So in terms of being active and make things happen quickly, yeah, it's a good fit for me.
Is it fun for you having the NCAA championships back in Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it'd be better if we had more tickets, but yeah, it's definitely a fun place to go back to.
Yeah, how many did you get?
We put in for 100, we got 50. I think we did better than some teams based on percentage of what we asked for, I know that. You know, I don't know. I'm hearing all kinds of things. I'm hearing, you know, geography played a part. You know, they fed more tickets to people closer to the arena, you know, and, you know, some of the teams out west didn't get as much. So I don't know how it worked out. But yeah, for us, I mean, some people didn't get nearly the percentage we did. I know that.
What's the solution? Next year won't be a problem being in the Twin Cities, but do we need to go to a venue that big all the time?
I think we need, I mean, we've grown. I think we can support these bigger venues now, you know. I mean, we all like a nice, tight atmosphere, and I think we like that for dual meets. That's really, you know, where you want to be. You want to be match tight, you want to be up close. But this event is so big, and especially, you know, you put it in a wrestling state. So I think if you're going to take an event like this and you're going to put it in a wrestling state that you know is going to draw a crowd, then the venue needs to be increased, you know, plain and simple. You know, now we're going to go to, you know, off of Minnesota where it seats 30,000, and Minnesota is a wrestling state and it's surrounded, but, you know, that's a big venue. You know, we'll see how we do there. I think we'll do okay. But Pennsylvania definitely should have had a bigger venue.
Always been intrigued by Josh Heil, just the connection that he had a brother that was a two-time NCAA champion. How did they feed off each other being at different schools?
You know, those guys had a big Twitter relationship. We used to joke because they would be on Twitter, you know, talking to each other publicly every night. But yeah, they fed for, you know, for Josh, I mean, you know, he's got a certain pedigree. That's his expectations. His brother's a two-time national champion. You know, Josh had not won the Ohio State championship, but when I looked at Josh, I knew I was going to get a good guy because I knew his ultimate goal was to be a national champion. And that's what the guys we need in our room. So I knew he was going to pick my team up. I knew he wasn't going to be, you know, happy with slim victories. I knew he wasn't going to be happy with losses. I knew he was going to do what it took to fix those things. And I knew he was going to try to do what his brother did. So that, you know, that was what I looked at when I was recruiting him.
Does he have the chip on his shoulder like his brother does?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he wants to win every time he steps on the mat. So yeah, it's there.
What's the ceiling for you? We talk about where you guys can go and you just say you're a go, go, go guy. What do you want to get accomplished by the time you're done at Campbell?
For here, you know, look, I want to be, I want our worst year ever to be a top 20 program. You know, that's what I want the low point to be, that we've always established that with our recruiting and the type of kids we get and with the format of how we run a program and the attitude with our guys that, you know, outside of the top 20 is a complete failure. Inside the top 20 is, okay, we had a bad year and we are that program that starts to keep climbing where we're consistently a top 15, top 10 program. And then, you know, who knows what happens down the road. You know, we've seen programs, but I always tell people, and not that I like to talk about other programs, but, you know, Rob Cole has been at Cornell for a very long time, you know, and when I was coming in, when we were coming out of high school, you know, nobody talked about ever competing at an Ivy League. That wasn't, you didn't go there to win national titles. And we've seen that change. And we've seen Cornell is going to be a program that they're not going to be making a run every year, but maybe the stars align. They get, they pick up a few here. They get a transfer. All of a sudden they can make a run like we saw, you know, five, six years ago. You know, and so that's where I think our program can be. We can, as we continue to be in people's faces more and more, on the mat, at the national tournament, in big duels, having good seasons, you know, social media wise, that we start to pick up better and better guys.
How big was that to get your first wrestling All-American?
It was big. It was really big for the program. You know, I think now we're sitting on a team where we've got a few more guys in there and possibly a guy can get it done here in the future, you know, so it was big. You know, everything's a step, right? Everything's a step. And you know, I always tell the guys, we celebrate everything. Everything that we've never done, it's the process. You know, right now we're fighting to win the Southern Conference Dual Meet Championship. We've never done that. You know, we do it. It's another step. Once we've done it, you're not going to be as excited about it. Then it's, you know, the next step is to, you know, go and win the, you know, the Virginia Duels or whatever. It's continuing the climb. But, you know, you celebrate those little victories. You know, it's something to be proud of, but then you gotta outperform it the next year.
It's got to be cool, though, that you're on people's radars, that we would want to interview you, that you've really ascended to that point where now Campbell's relevant where they weren't in the past. I hope that's a badge of honor for you.
Yeah, well, last night we went out and faced Gardner Webb. Before, I told the guys, I said, look, the rankings had, you know, just come out. I said, look, you know, there are people putting our program in the top 25. Never, ever has Campbell ever been even mentioned. I'm saying now we're in the top 25 of national rankings. I'm like, I told you all, this is the best team that we've ever put on the mat. Now let's go out and wrestle Gardner Webb and continue to show that we are a really good program. And we're going to continue to get better on that, you know. And so, you know, top 25 ranking, everybody knows rankings don't always mean everything. But it's like when I was in high school, so I open up the paper, I might see my name, it says I'm on track, I must be doing things right, people are talking about me. Now people are talking about our program, you know, and we're in the rankings. Rankings don't mean anything for the most part, but they're talking about it. So we're in the conversation. We've changed, you know.
Hey, final question before we let you go. We appreciate this, but as we're talking about dream matchups, I know we can't make the comparison right now, but prime against prime, how cool would that match be between you and Yanni Diakomihalis?
Between who?
You and Yanni.
Yanni? I guess it would be a match, yeah, you know. Different styles, different times. I look, these kids are better now. I mean, that guy won as a freshman. I took second. So his poise is obviously better. His focus was obviously better. And they've got better guys with these RTCs training. So I guess it depends on what time we hit. But as a freshman compared from when I was a freshman, he's a better wrestler. You know, so you got to get guys where they peak at the right time. So, you know, peak match, again, I'm not conceding a loss to anybody. But if it's freshman versus freshman, you know, I'm giving him the win because he showed more poise than I did my freshman.
I'm not even saying who's going to win. I just think it'd be a blast to watch that happen. I just think it'd be a lot of fun. I think that it's the right matchup for a lot of entertainment for the sport. Hey, Kerry, thanks for spending this time with us. We'll be watching you at the NCAA Championships, and we wish you all the best as you continue on with your season.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for the interview. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks, Kerry. Andy, that was our first time interviewing Kerry Kolot on this program. And if anyone's looking for how to give an interview, Kerry Kolot's a great prototype. He gave a lot of insight, gave us lots of answers, a lot of things to think about. He's a guy I think we need to make sure we have back on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said it's the first time he's been on this program. Pretty sure it won't be the last, right?
Can't be. We enjoyed that so much that we want to make sure that we follow what he does with that team, because I can guarantee you nobody was talking about Campbell 10 years ago. I bet a lot of people didn't even know Campbell had a Division I program 10 years ago, and now it is fully on the radar because of Kerry Kolot and what he represents. He is a big name. He's a big-time player in the wrestling world, and so to have a name like that attached to your program, Campbell better do everything they have in their power to keep him there and keep him happy.
It sounds like they're doing that, right? I mean, you talk about facilities upgrades that are in the works, and you know, he's certainly put them on the map. You know, like we talked to him about, it's really fascinating how you look at their roster composition and so many different states represented, a couple foreign countries represented. I think that he's a guy that, you know, people recognize his name. They know his story. He can pull in guys from all over, not just the country, all over the world now.
Hey, so. I want to end with this. I was at the Battle of the Bergs, Wartburg versus Augsburg. We may have mentioned this a couple times, but Augsburg or Wartburg have won every Division III championship since 1995. And it came down to criteria, which is good for us because it fits into PDI. It was 15-15. And then Wartburg ended up winning on criteria, which is the most match points scored, which is the way it should be. But in having that conversation, went up with Jim Miller, who was the longtime coach at Wartburg. He won 10 NCAA championships, truly an icon in our sport. He told me a great story because you always look at the back end of these guys and you see the success they had and you see all they've accomplished and they become larger than life. But he told me a story when he was a high school wrestling coach at Charles City. He couldn't afford a car. And so this was right out of college. He went to Riceville, Iowa, and then the next year he went to Charles City. So he didn't have a car. He had to get an apartment that was close enough to the high school so that he could walk over every day and walk back and forth to the high school. He needed a senior on the high school wrestling team to give him a ride to the grocery store so he could get groceries. That's wow. The level he was at that time.
Wow.
And he had to take officiating jobs just so he could make enough money so he could get a car. So it's always fun to see how someone progress into a legend. Here's a guy that ends up being on the front page sports of the New York Times and has 10 NCAA championships and really regarded in our sport, that had to start at that base level of having a high school senior on the team give you a ride to get groceries. So
it's incredible.
It can happen. It can progress to that way, but he found a way to get to that level. So it's never just an automatic jump. You have to take your steps, but I loved that story and love to be able to hear that. I've been thinking about it ever since. Pretty amazing how life can transpire in such a unique way.
Those are awesome stories, right?
Yeah.
People that work from the ground up.
Yeah. And you kind of think once they're an icon, they always are. You just think, hey, they naturally got to that, but it takes a lot of work to get there.
1995, the last time.
Isn't that crazy?
What were you doing in 1995,
I was graduating high school in 1995. Yeah. That was what I was doing. So it would have been, Augsburg would have won it. I would have graduated just a couple months later, and it's been those two teams ever since.
Wow.
It's a streak like no other, and by all indications, it's going to be one of those teams again this year. Johnson and Wales in the mix, but I think it's going to be Augsburg or Wartburg based on what just happened. So we'll see, and it looks like Track Wrestling is going to be covering the D3 championships.
Yep.
So excited about that. Hey, this has been fun. We'll have another Casper's Corner coming up in 2 or 3 weeks. We had Kerry Collot. We appreciate you listening. For Andrew Hamilton, the Owl of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You've been listening.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.